You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm the host of The Back 40, Mike Brine, agribusiness specialist at Trillium Mutual Insurance. I think one of the biggest pitfalls that we run across in both our personal lives and in business as well is communication. We've talked a bit about the different ways to communicate within families and different pitfalls that you run across, but we all know of the problems that we have between obviously generations, but certainly different personalities within a farm, and also different personalities that we run into in our business lives as well. Organizations can run into those same problems. Sometimes it helps to have an outsider come in and give a little bit of coaching as to how the better ways to communicate are. Today, we're talking with Mel Limas. She is the owner and operator of Headlands AgroEnviro Solutions, which is a consulting firm. Mel, welcome to the Back 40.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about Headlands and how this fits into the ag community.
It sounds fancy to say it's a consulting firm, but it's a one-girl shop here. My background is in sociology. I love working at the intersection of like behavior change, agriculture, and the environment. It's a really interesting space to work in. My actual day-to-day jobs are often with organizational leadership. So I work with professional ag contractors and LICO, the land improvement contractors, the drainage contractors, but also with innovative farmers and with the Ontario Soil Network. At every level, communication will help us be better in our own relationships and families, but also as an organization and up until Canada and the world in terms of getting along. But it starts with us.
You do a fair bit of work with, and you talk the Soils Network and the environment, and it's right in the name that you've chosen for your company. How does the idea of that improved communication translate out into a practical standpoint into something such as soil improvement?
We've got to be able to change well and communicate well to get anything done. And I'm always coming from a sociological lens because I did my master's in sociology. So when I look at soil health, I actually see a crisis of communication and a crisis of leadership. The technology says, and a lot of scientists say this, we know how to do this, just we're not communicating about it very well. It's leading to a lot of defensiveness and stopping the conversation. So with the Soil Network, that's something that I started with Woody Vanarkle and a few others in 2017. It really was farmers talking to farmers through a leadership lens of how can we better talk to each other? If we could have better conversations, we could talk organic and conventional growers. We could talk large and small growers without coming to loggerheads and having disagreements that block the conversation.
It's a little bit, though, like that defensiveness that this is the way I do it. This is the way I want to do it. I'm really not interested in what you're doing. I don't really want to hear that. I just want to tell you what I'm doing.
It's so true because so much of our time and energy is spent convincing people that we're right. Like, how are we ever going to learn if we can't, in essence, get over ourselves? So a lot of this, when we talk about leadership, it really is, it's like personal development. You need to be able to have that self-awareness, see what you're doing. Oh, I'm not listening anymore to understand. I'm listening to respond. You know, you've blocked communication. That's human nature. So it's not that we're bad. It's just that we need to recognize that and we can learn a different way of communicating and choose differently.
Yeah, that concept of listening to understand versus listening to be able to reply is something that in many cases, it's a learned skill. It's not something that comes naturally to us. And that comes with, you know, the baggage that we all carry around. We're right. We want to convince everybody else to do it our way. And we don't learn a lot by doing that.
No, exactly. And it's arrogant in a sense to assume that the way that you see the world is the way the world is. I love that analogy of the six blind men and the elephant.
Yes.
And they all come up to an elephant and the one is holding its ear and being like, oh, this is like paper. And the other one's by the leg and says, this is a tree. And only if you're really listening to the other people and take their experience as their experience, like of reality, then you come to an actual understanding of reality. But as long as you're just hell-bent on your way of seeing the world, you're never going to get a bigger picture.
We see what we want to see. We don't see what everybody else wants us to see.
Right.
So what are the advantages, though, to opening yourself up to actually listening to what somebody else has got to say?
Where do I begin? Your relationships, your life, like all of this is at stake. when you dig your heels in and just trying to convince everyone that you're right, you lose connection with anyone that you're trying to talk with. You always have a choice. Do I need to be right in this, or do I need to connect with this person? And connection is where you get true happiness. Being right, no one on their deathbed was like, I was right. It's not what life is about. It's about getting a better relationship with being wrong, admitting that you're wrong. Like that leads to true happiness.
Now that's an interesting concept, this idea that being wrong leads to true happiness.
No, the ability to admit to someone, to change your mind and an opinion on something. It's interesting when people call out a celebrity or someone in the media that say, well, you said this before, you know, especially because when it's recorded several years ago, you know, and they come back, would you rather that I didn't change my mind about an important issue? I want us always to be changing our mind. And so, yes, I believed that at the time. I have now opened my mind to other perspectives and I see it differently now. That's huge. You're probably wondering, what does this have to do with farming?
Well, we're going to tie that all back in again.
It has everything to do with farming.
I think that has a lot to do with a lot of our daily lives, and that includes what we do on a day-to-day basis. Now, you started talking about the idea of the soil network, of listening to other people to get that idea. Is that something that you actively facilitate when you're talking to people, this idea of you need to listen to what the other person is saying?
Yes, but we're always learning to listen better. Since 2017, we've now had 4 cohorts of the Soil Network, and now there's 100 people. They come in with a bit of a leadership training aspect. So we're going to listen through this lens. And so I'm actually just finishing up a 5-part series for our leadership network shops, we call them. And they've been about relationship with failure, especially for farmers that are using cover crops and no-till and plant green. Like some of these guys are doing cutting edge things. If you don't have a thick skin to, you know, learning, I guess you call it. They don't even want to use the word failure. If you learn from it, it's not a failure. We're talking about that. We're talking about how to do on-farm research. Then we're looking at how to do public speaking, how to tell your story effectively. We're looking at how to set goals for yourself and manage your time. Like all of this directly translates into your happiness and your farm life. But the one I'm most intrigued by is how to deal with difficult people. We called it how to handle your haters, but really most people admitted that their biggest hater is themselves. And so we looked at that. What is that self-talk that we're doing? We looked at personality tests, how to understand your own personality and the strengths of it and see the strengths in other people's personalities, especially the ones that rub you the wrong way. And we looked at nonviolent communication as well. So that was interesting.
That's an interesting name for a method of communications. What exactly is that?
Nonviolent communication?
Yes.
It's trademarked, so I have to say it like that. But Dr. Marshall Rosenberg, he's passed on now, but he was a psychologist. He does conflict mediation in essence is what it is. He was really getting that when you talk on the level of facts, you might not be connecting because now you're just like, well, I'm right. No, I'm right. And here I have these facts to back me up. And here, well, I have these facts. And we really do live in a post-fact world. And he really got that you can't get anywhere in an argument or anything when you're just talking on facts. He said, let's drop down to a deeper level and try to connect with people's feelings and needs. Again, this sounds soft. It's very hard to do, but it is freeing once you can get this. Everyone has needs. We all have common needs that are just part of human nature, like safety and shelter, but also love and respect and all that. When you can really connect with your own needs and connect with others, you start having a completely different conversation. And it's not a zero-sum game. You can create these win-win solutions that will only appear after you've really understood where the other person's needs are coming from. I mean, I see it in my family even. We use this. My brothers work with my parents. My brothers are making most of the decisions, but there's always some tension, especially with land prices right now when we want to expand.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yes, you can imagine. This was one of the most powerful illustrations of this. And I should also preface by saying we are a Dutch family. We do not talk about our feelings and emotions, but we were having...
I think that's common, though. I think that's really common on farms. Farmers don't want to talk about their feelings. They really are stuck on those facts that you talked about.
They really are. So the example was that there's a larger property that was coming up for auction. And we wanted to put some numbers to, like, how much could we bid for this? We know we needed to expand, or my brothers know they needed to expand. My brothers had done all the scenarios of all the different interest rates. They had all the facts. but my parents would not look at the numbers. So we couldn't have a conversation about facts anymore. So I suggested, and they all watched Marshall Rosenberg's, they did their homework on YouTube. There's a 3-hour training session that he did quite a while ago. It's very old looking, but it's so great. So we agreed to use these tools. One evening we had a meeting and I said, the only goal is for my brothers to understand the feelings and needs of my parents and vice versa. Any solution that you try to make before coming to the other person's understanding is going to be another strategy of manipulating and, you know, and trying to control and be right in a situation. Only when you're really willing to go there. I'll remember that conversation forever because my mom and dad got, like, for the first time, I really understood how hard it was for them in the 80s with the interest rates. And that was when all of us were young kids and just the sleepless nights, the amount of anxiety, and that my dad and mom were trying to protect their kids from going through that same amount of tension and risk.
Unless you've been through it, you don't truly understand it. You know,
we don't.
You hear people talk about like your savings accounts with their high interest, and they're talking a point and a half.
Yeah.
And I can remember mortgages at 20%.
Yeah.
Put that in perspective, a mortgage at 20% means that about every 3.5 years, you're going to pay as much in interest as you paid for whatever it is you bought.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable numbers that in many cases just simply don't work. They make what looks to be a reasonable amount to buy a farm for just mm-hmm. unworkable when it comes time to actually have to pay for it.
Totally.
And I went through that. I mean, I remember the penny auctions. I remember people going out of business mm-hmm. and high interest rates putting people out of business, losing their farms, losing everything that they'd worked for. It's not an environment that people are familiar with today.
No, and we, like, maybe we would have got a sense of it growing up with that sort of anxiety looming over our family, but we really got a good sense of it that night when we just listened to my mom and dad talk about how that was for them and that their need now was to protect the rest of their family and their offspring from that same feeling. But then on the other hand, you know, once my brothers could articulate that, okay, I get that you're feeling anxious because you're needing kind of security for us. And then on the flip side, we got to hear my brothers who now have kids of their own. And these kids are like quite the avid carpet farmers. So, you know, where they're going to want to take over the farm one day. They said, I get that. And I'm so grateful that you went through that amount of struggle for us. And I want to struggle. I'm willing to struggle. We're willing to struggle that same way so that our kids have a viable operation because it needs to get bigger if it's going to be viable, sadly, in this day and age.
Yep.
So then I think my parents really felt the gratitude from them and that they also wanted to continue the legacy. And they were like eyes wide open, willing to take on a risk. It was a really beautiful conversation. It didn't come to a solution at the end of the evening. I think it got pretty late and we just went home. But I just wanted to trust the process. Like, honestly, the very next day, or maybe it was a few days later, but they overheard a conversation that one of our neighbors was looking to sell. So this was a smaller property, a lot more manageable, and it would solve a lot of the problems, so many other problems that I didn't even get into. But they were on the same page, like that was a unanimous yes. They walked in there and they negotiated a deal before it went to auction, because then we would have got outbid. But they had just a unanimous yes. And in a few days, they had that property. And that was something beautiful that I wonder if we had to come to that connection first, and then the solution was just going to magically appear. I don't know. People may not believe in magic, but I sure do.
People have to prepare to come to understand the other person's viewpoint before you ever have that conversation. And if you don't have that conversation first, maybe you have that same reaction when that property comes available from your parents and from your brothers, right? You don't know, but that would have been a difficult sell without that conversation happening first.
It would have. It's not always these big deals that we need to practice listening. Another buddy of mine, he farms with his son, and his son doesn't like to get up very early in the morning. But my buddy, he's like, I have a choice every day whether I'm going to be mad at him or not, you know?
Yep.
And so he says, when he comes into the shop eventually, I can give him, you know, a laundry list of the things that he should have been doing and all that. And he said, or I can just accept him as he is, greet him with a good morning, and we get on our day. And he's like, and that will totally change the tone of the day. I have a choice in that. He really gets that he's got a choice in how he thinks about things and how he interacts with everyone around him. And when I think about like some of the farms I've seen, or some of the tensions even in our own family boil down to, why didn't you say hi to me in the morning? You know, you lose trust. Even those small, tiny little things, they make a big difference. And it does boil down to personality type.
Is your organization in need of funding? Trillium's Roots Community Fund is currently looking to provide money to projects for organizations that are agriculturally focused. Applications are now being accepted towards facilities or equipment upgrades, funding for research, innovations, and much more. To learn more about Roots, including how to apply, visit our website at trilliummutual.com and click Community at the top of the page. Touched a bit on the personality types before, and that sometimes your different personality types can actually have conflict there just simply because of the different types they are. And I think that's a great example you gave there of simply someone that likes to get up first thing in the morning and someone that likes to not get up as early, but maybe work later at night. Like, how does all that work together? And then you talked about these personality tests. Help our listeners understand that a little bit better.
Again, I'll just go back to our own family. And yeah, they might kill me if they hear this, me using them as examples all the time. We use the DISC test, and there's many of them, but the DISC test is pretty simple to explain. Like, imagine it like four quadrants. The y-axis, if you're high on that y-axis, you are like a go-getter, getter done, rammer through type of person, like fast, rarely active. And then if you're on the bottom of that y-axis, you're slower to come to make decisions. You want to be more methodical. You're more likely to be right because you've actually put the time in. And then on the x-axis, on the one side, are you people focused? Are you warm into people? Do you love working with people? Does that light you up? Or are you like, please get out of my way, I would like to do the task now, thank you, type of a person? If you break that into your four quadrants, and people just innately sort of know, okay, I'm on this side and that. So you put yourself in a quadrant. If you're fast, task-driven person, it's a dominant personality, direct. People on the flip side can see that as domineering or demanding, but those are the D's. The majority of my family is in the D's section. I, on the other hand, am in the I, which is people focused, but also really fast. So it's more influential, like a cheerleader type, but it's also can be seen as impulsive and a bit irritating to people. I understand that. So then if we move down into, if you are people focused, but slower and more methodical than steady, these are like the backbone of any team. Sadly, we don't have any of those on our farm team. Maybe when we look for our next hire, we'll try to get someone with that personality type. So they're stable, they're supportive, but also people can see them as slow or a bit too sensitive. And then lastly, the last quadrant is C in the DISC acronym. So C is, I don't know, conscientious, careful, cautious, but also can be negatively seen as calculating or condescending. They're focused on their task. They're slow. They want to do it right. For example, not necessarily my family, but for example, if you had the leader, like the decision maker was the C and all the rest of the family was up in the D's and like the fast paced, that person would be constantly feeling rushed, feeling uber responsible that no one else cares about the operation because they're the only one that's time to think about it. So you can see how we need all types though. If you look at your own strengths and the strengths of the other parts along that spectrum, we really do need all types on a good functioning team, but you need to understand how to communicate with that type of person. Me being an I, like fast paced and I like to connect with people. I can start talking about the weather and, you know, have that sort of small talk before you start getting into the meat of the conversation, but I also want it to go fast. I wanted to get her done. Yep. And then next, right? Whereas someone who's more slow would want to have like a much longer conversation. But if you're dealing with someone that's fast paced, don't annoy them. Have short conversations. Do your thinking on your own and like communicate what needs to be communicated and then get her done.
You talked about in a case where your leadership wants to be more methodical and take more time to consider all the options. And you've got everybody else that's that fast paced, just wants to get it done and how the one person can feel rushed. I'm sure those other people have their side of that coin. And what they see, of course, is somebody that can't make a decision, can't keep up with them. So there's that frustration on both parts. How do you overcome that? You talked about like communications, mm-hmm. but where do you start? Because that to me seems like a situation that's just all sorts of opportunities for misunderstandings there.
So many great opportunities to ruin a perfectly good family. For all the ones up in the D quadrant, yeah, they would think, why can't this person come to a decision? Like, yeah, like hurry it up. But when they understand that that person is likely going to make the right decision because they're taking the time, then I'd rather, you know what? Okay, I'm going to give you all the information you need and all the time you need and wait, do another project in the meantime, right? And then come back to it.
I think that's something that a lot of us have that difficulty yeah. with is waiting for somebody else. And yet you're right. Like if you've got someone that's going to take the yeah. time to make the right decision, you've got to let yes. them make that right decision and trust that they're going to come exactly. to that conclusion and it'll be best for you as well.
Yeah.
Is that partly recognizing what our own weaknesses are? Because as well as strengths in this, we also have weaknesses
yes, totally.
That are associated with each of those quadrants there. And sometimes we look at what the advantages are to ourselves, but we tend to put blinders on when it comes to, okay, but that also means that this is a weakness that I have.
Totally. And it's humbling to know that people might see me as impulsive and irritating, but I've got to own that, right? And again, there's strengths in all. Like there's not like I won the personality test. There's no winning. Every personality is great. But having that awareness and knowing, okay, I might need to tone down my bubbliness for my brother, especially. I mentioned, yeah, that's on the opposite side of the spectrum for me. I could just tone it down a little bit and talk slower and come to being with more facts instead of ideas, right? So just understanding that. But always it has to come with the desire to connect. And that is fundamental to everything is if you don't have the desire to connect with a member of your family and to actually work together as a team, then you got to go have a step back and like have some empathy for yourself. What need is not being met? When we don't get our needs met, that's when we have all the negative emotions. If our needs are met, then we have positive emotions. Like they're literally our feelings, like in our body, they're physiological responses to needs that are met or not met. So if you're struggling with the negative emotions and can't even connect with anyone, you need to get your needs met first and foremost. And no one else is responsible for meeting your needs. This is the hard part of nonviolent communication is it gets you out of victim mode very fast. No one else is responsible for making you happy or getting your needs met. Only you can. First is identifying what they even are. What am I not getting right now that I'm needing? And then how will I get that? It's no one else's responsibility to deliver that. And a lot of times it's not something that someone can do. I just need freedom or I need confidence. Those are not things that other people can give to you.
I've always kind of used from the, and it's along the same line, but the perspective of we don't control what happens to us, but we do control how we react to it. And that's a lot of what you're talking about here is how do we react to what other people do or what other things happen to us and still find a way to get our needs met?
Totally. And I like the saying too, is life doesn't happen to you. It happens for you. So anything that comes your way, no matter what it is, good or bad during the day, is a lesson. And that also helps me react better because I don't see myself as like coming right at me and happening to me. It's happening for me. How am I going to learn from this?
Happiness is a choice, and being satisfied with your life is a choice that each one of us gets to make every single day.
What was that Socrates quote? He who is richest is content with the least. So you really got to look at, okay, a need is not like to keep up with the Joneses, is not a need, right? It's a strategy. You think that by having a bigger combine or this or this or this is going to bring you happiness or is going to bring you something, but it's just a strategy. Usually our strategies, especially if we don't understand the underlying needs, our strategies just basically guarantee that our needs are not met if we're not doing it with consciousness. We're basically on autopilot being like, oh, I feel this, therefore I must do that. That blind reaction always kicks us in the butt. And no, having a bigger combine does not make you happier. The farmers that I've talked to, they just look like they have it all together, the envy of the town. But I mean, I've talked with them and they are hurting. They are depressed as just as much as anyone else. And you can say, well, you've got first world problems. I'm like, the strategy doesn't meet that need. you'll never be happy. It doesn't matter how big your farm is. It doesn't matter how shiny your tractors are.
It's separating the difference between needs and wants.
Yes.
And the needs are what we have to have. The wants are what we think we should have.
Yeah.
And gathering, that gets back to that Socrates quote, gathering more stuff around us. For some people, that's what they want to do. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you look at that is going to make me happy, that's not going to make you happy, right? That has to come from something else. And you may be a very happy person while you're doing this, but that's not what's going to make you happy. Getting your needs met and how you react to what's happening around you is where that happiness comes from.
Totally. And if you do drive yourself into that much debt just to keep up or just to give the appearances that you're happy, like that's when some serious stress starts happening, as you can well imagine. There's all these big issues that are going on in the world today, and we feel really powerless. I often feel really powerless to have any sort of control over the big things that are happening on a national level or a global level. But what I do have control of is my life, the people around me. And I think that does make an impact. If you choose peace with your parents, with your neighbors, and you actively choose peace, that has a ripple effect in a way that we can't quite understand. But I think that has a ripple effect across the industry and across the world. But start, clean up your own house, like start with your own baggage. And that's what we can do. And ultimately, I think that's all we can do.
I think it's the spheres of influence that we talk about. And some of us have been through and we've seen them before. And you have to look at what you have control over, what you have influence over, and what just happens outside. As you go further out in these spheres of influence, you get less and less control over stuff. And you need to have more acceptance over what you can do about it.
And how can we expect to have, you know, some semblance of a normal conversation at a national level in parliament when we can't even talk with our own siblings or workmates? So how can we expect that anything will get better? It just starts at home. And then it goes into our organizations. Going back to where we started, I guess, is work together across the province. I really love the way that the Soil Network does leadership. Everyone is a leader. It's not, oh, I'm the president of such and such association, therefore I have been given permission to do something meaningful. Like, we're just a group of farmers that connect and say, ooh, wouldn't it be cool if we did that? And then we just sort of self-organize around an issue, or, you know, there's no one with a magic wand that now says, okay, you can make an impact on Ontario agriculture or on soil health. Yes, we do it on our own farms. That's important too. But working together and working well together is super powerful.
It's interesting you talk about that. We all make that difference.
Yes.
When we do, like you implement something on your farm. And I've watched around here and I've talked about this on the podcast, where if you go back 40 years ago, you have a beautiful sunny winter day with a little bit of plowing sticking through and the wind blows and all the snow turns black because it picks up that. We don't see that anymore, right? We don't see that anymore here because we have minimum tillage and no tillage and different techniques that are used by and large in this area. But that didn't happen with all of a sudden everybody being told you need to go to no-till. We all looked at what everybody else was doing. A story, my next door neighbor grew quinoa, and he grew one in the field next to me, and it got lamb's quarters in it. And I don't know if you people realize just how closely related those two are.
They are kissing cousins for sure.
Right. An impossibility there for him to actually get through it and harvested it. So the next one he grew was across from me in a field that actually was on my grandfather's farm, and it looked beautiful. He had great weed control. And I asked him about it. And he said there was virtually nothing on it. It hardly yielded anything at all. And I said, so what are you doing next year? He says, next year, I'm going to grow it in the backfield.
Right.
Because I'm getting tired of people asking me about it. And I think, but everybody looks at what somebody else is doing and they're curious to see. And that's how progress happens, right? We see what the neighbor is doing and then we ask what the results are. And then we look at how we can adapt that. Yes. If we're not willing to ask those questions and listen for the answers, then we never make that connection.
No, exactly. And the farmers in the Soil Network, they're not the ones that, you know, hold their cards close to their chest and don't talk about what they're doing. They're open. Like, we share spreadsheets, everything, farm tours to each other's shops and go through what everyone's doing, because we all learn better together. And when we do better together, we're improving the industry and we are improving soil health. So they're some of the most open people, and it's got to be that way. I know why people would want to, you know, not share their trade secrets.
I get that.
Yeah. And like, it's not for everyone, but definitely the people that we're working with in the Soil Network are just phenomenal. Like, they're sharing their story and they just want to get better together. So like, that to me is leadership. Again, you don't need to be in an official organization in any official capacity. Leadership is how you communicate with your family, with your teammate. It's how you are open in your life. And yeah, who knows what impact that's going to have.
Our biggest problems that we have that are related through to soil health and things like erosion, which was much bigger problem when I was in school than it is now. I won't say that's been solved, but certainly we've made huge strides in that. But now we talk about placement and fertilizer, whether it's going to stay on and phosphorus blooms in Lake Erie. And those are major, major issues that as an individual farmer, I cannot solve that. But I can stop that from moving off my farm if I do everything right. You can't do that unless you have that communication with somebody else. You can't do that unless you ask someone else what they're doing and how it's working. We simply cannot afford to try all these different things on our farm and hope that we luck across one that works.
No, exactly. It's very unmotivating to get a finger wave from the government.
Yes.
As well. Like, that's not really, that's not something that motivates us. But yet the OMAFRA staff that work on the field level have just been phenomenal in the Soil Network, even like in connecting with farmers with each other, in sharing the knowledge. They would take the farmers' knowledge that they're working with and share it. So they do have a big part, but not in terms of finger waving and regulation. Like, I don't think that's the solution here. It's a cultural change, right?
It is. And I think a lot of people say, oh, well, everybody hates change. No, people don't hate change. People hate change that is imposed upon them.
Yes.
We like to control what that change is. And if we don't deal with some of these problems from a proactive perspective there, somebody will come in and tell us how we're going to do that.
Exactly.
You don't have to go back very far. You look at neonicotinoids. Mm-hmm. And there is a perfect example of the industry being told, this is how you're going to do it. And it was not well received.
No, not at all.
And that's not a surprise. That shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that it wasn't well received. But if we're going to deal with some of the other problems, such as the algae bloom in Lake Erie, we've got to make the changes or else somebody's going to tell us what we have to do.
And again, it comes down to really trying to understand the other. A lot of times, if we don't understand what the other's thinking or doing, we just assume that they're either stupid or evil. And this came from Roger Martin and Jennifer Riel's book, Creating Great Choices. If you just sort of automatically shut down and be like, okay, that person is evil, that person is stupid, your options are to educate them or to regulate them. If the government is doing that to farmers, it means that there's a crisis of communication. They don't understand farmers and farming enough. If those are your only two options, that makes me think, okay, we need to go back up the bus a little bit, we need to develop some more solid relationships and really get that shared understanding of what each other's needs are, and then have that conversation. How do you do that at a national level? But I don't know. I think that there are key people that you could build those relationships with. And I honestly think, like, we build relationships for soil health. I see them as totally linked, even though you might not think that they're related at all. But I guess when I put on my sociological lens from my schooling, that's just how I see the world, is everything is related to good communication.
I think that from the standpoint of dealing with the government and government as I have it, we accuse the government of not listening, but often we don't speak with one voice.
Yes.
Often we don't strive to understand what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
And we often end up with solutions being imposed upon us because we don't tend to want to deal with it. We don't listen to what it is that society in general is saying, hey, this is really important to us.
Yep.
And neonicotinoids are a good example. The bees are dying. This is a problem. We're going to do something about it. You're going to stop using neonics.
Yep.
And that didn't go over well because there wasn't the consultation there as to how we could do that or whether it was even the problem at the time. And that was something that, as I said, it didn't go well. It could have been handled so much better on both sides. It could have been handled, but it starts with that, with the farming community understanding what the concerns are. And then the government saying, okay, so what are your concerns and how do we meet in the middle here? Totally. We have a real opportunity to do that with something like soil health, that we need to listen to what the problems are. And we're starting to do that. We're starting to hear this is what society sees as a problem. Mm-hmm. And now we need to have that same thing where governments will say, okay, well, we see that there's a solution out there. These guys are working towards that.
Totally. And
it comes back to that spheres of influence, right? Like, how do you influence the people that you need to?
And you start before you try to think about influencing someone else, you need to start by understanding them.
Right.
So even our getting our three agricultural lobby groups together might be a good start. I don't know how it is in Quebec, but I sure know that they've got a stronger voice for agriculture. So I'd be curious to see what that do for Ontario is if we, again, got our own industry on the same page and started working together.
That is very hard to do. It's a real challenge there. Mm-hmm. And yet, having worked for the government and in government programs, the people that were most effective at getting what they wanted were the ones that spoke with one voice. And the tendency is when you come in and you've got different voices from the same industry, one says, I want this, and one says, I want this, and one says, I want this. It's really easy for the government to say, go away and come back when you know what you want and we'll listen. But until then, they're not going to do something that could potentially upset half of the industry.
Totally.
It isn't in their nature to go that route.
Exactly. And they would need clarity from the industry. And we're not being clear. That's on us. Again, clean up our house before we try to influence someone else.
I think that groups like the Ontario Soil Network is something that's a step certainly in that right direction. That's getting people on the same page. And not that we're all have the same ideas behind it, but that we're all willing to listen to what everybody else has in order to work towards a solution. Yeah. I mean, that's where you start, right? It doesn't start with one person saying, I've got the answer. It starts with one person saying, I need a solution. Has anybody got an answer?
I've got a question. Yeah. No.
Yeah, I got a question. What's the answer?
Exactly. Well, and getting multiple perspectives on the same issues. That is the power of the Soil Network. And again, it's very informal. We don't put out white papers. I think our core value is hanging out with a beer and developing those relationships.
There's worse core values, that's for sure.
I know. But it starts, again, with building those relationships. And what could we do if we could get farmers of all different types? It's not just farmers in the Soil Network. There's agronomists, people elsewhere in the industry from conservation authorities and government even. But we're all there with a common purpose is to build relationships to build soil health.
It's an interesting concept.
Indeed. But it's very fun.
If people want to find out more about either the Ontario Soil Network or about Headlands Ag and Virus Solutions, how do they go about doing that?
You can just call it Headlands.
Headlands. I'll do that.
Soil Network is totally open. If anyone wants to join our events, just go to ontariosoil.net/events and just sign up. Right now we're meeting online until we can meet in person again. But yeah, free for everyone. Just come be a part of it. And then for myself, I'm at headlands.ca. So I've got a smattering of all the projects I'm working on right now and some contact information there. Would love to connect with anyone.
I really enjoyed getting a chance to talk to you today, Mel. We've been speaking with Mel Limas from Headlands Ag Enviro Solutions.
You've been listening to The Back 40. Join us next time when our guest will be Pat Bushby. Pat has been involved in the grain trade for a number of years, and we're going to be talking about the current situation for commodities and how the conflict in Ukraine is affecting our commodity markets. That's next time on The Back 40.
You've been listening to The Back 40, brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance. Be sure to subscribe to The Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm Mike Brine. Until next time, take care and stay safe.